Welcome to What Matters in North Carolina. It is what I am calling Fantastic Friday. We have a series of guests for you that are absolutely going to be out of this world. In fact, you are going to, you're definitely going to want to tell people, hey, you got to hear who Mark was talking to on What Matters in North Carolina. And folks, I'm talking about Senator Phil Berger, exclusively on What Matters in North Carolina, a very lengthy, well thought out time together. And his answers are candid and thoughtful, and I am just very, very excited. Senator Berger is a good friend of this program, and we are always glad to have him as our guest. And you're going to want to listen to this podcast. You're going to want to listen to this interview with him, and you're going to want to share it with people because it's the latest that he has to say, particularly about House Bill 2. And I'm not going to spoil the surprise. I'm going to let you listen for yourself, but I asked him a very pointed question, and he didn't blink. He gave me what I think is an excellent answer. And so strap in and get ready, because we're going to talk now with the President Pro Tem of the North Carolina Senate, someone that has been called the most powerful, you know, member of the General Assembly. I don't know if he would go along with that, but he certainly has done a lot to shape the General Assembly over the last 6 years. And in my personal opinion, I think he's done a tremendous job. And it's our pleasure to welcome to What Matters in North Carolina, Senator Phil Berger. And let's talk to him right now. It's a great pleasure to welcome back to What Matters in North Carolina, good friend of our show, Senator Phil Berger. Senator, welcome back.
Hey, Mark. Thanks. Good to be with you.
Well, it seemed like it's taken a while, but you guys are finally off and running.
We are. Have everybody sworn in, and have our chamber organized, and hopefully next week you'll see some activity out of the General Assembly.
Now, from where
I think folks would say, hopefully.
Exactly. Well, from where you sit as a President Pro Tem of the Senate, what are some of your key priorities for this legislative session?
You know, Mark, probably the number one priority is for us to continue moving North Carolina in the same direction that we've been working to get us in over the past 6 years, where what we're doing is being sensitive to what our business climate looks like, looking at our tax rates, looking at our regulatory issues, making sure that we address some real issues and problems in connection with our education system, and trying to just making sure that we continue to move in the right direction as far as those things are concerned.
Well, I would say that based on the continuous press that North Carolina has received over the past several months, it seems like every month or every couple of weeks that there's some publication, some national periodical, you know, North Carolina doing great, North Carolina great business climate, great place to do business, North Carolina this and that. And so I would say that folks that are looking at North Carolina from across the country think things are going in the right direction.
Yeah, and of course, the other thing, I'm a big believer that people vote with their feet, and what you're seeing is a lot of folks coming to North Carolina. We're one of the fastest growing states. We are adding population. We're also adding workers, people who are looking for jobs faster than just about any other state. So I think that's part of what I think we should point to as our success.
Well, there's no question about that. And one of the things I read over the summer, Senator Berger, was that the question was, how much more can you do as far as tax cuts before there's kind of a cooling off effect? And do you see in this session that there's room for more tax reform? Or is it true that you got to kind of let the economy catch up with what's already been done?
I think there's room for more. Not sure exactly what we'll have the capacity for. I think we've got to be careful that whatever we do in terms of modification of our tax rates, that we feel pretty confident that it's going to result in a net positive as far as overall economic activity. I think one of the other things that folks don't talk about a whole lot is we have to continue to maintain the budget discipline that we have exercised over the past 6 years. I think one of the things that that happens and people or states, governments get in trouble is you look at your revenue and you see that you're doing fairly well, and all of a sudden you decide that you can spend all that money, and I think that would be a huge mistake for us. I think that is something that we've got a pretty good track record of resisting, and I think you'll see that, at least as far as the General Assembly is concerned, we will continue to pay close attention to any growth as far as our spending is concerned.
Well, as you were talking, Senator, I couldn't help but remember, I don't remember the exact year, but it was either 2006 or 2007, and at that time, the Republicans were still the minority party, and you were a guest on a radio show I was involved in back then, and the Democrats were looking at about a $2 billion budget surplus, and I think you were one of the voices that was calling for prudence and let's set some of that money aside. Of course, they blew right through it all, and when the recession hit, well, you know the story, $3 billion budget deficit and all the mess that you guys inherited when you gained the majority in the General Assembly. So I think that anyone with any kind of economic sense would say that the course that you have charted by putting money aside, particularly in the, you know, reserve or rainy day fund, whatever people want to call it, was extremely prudent and wise.
And I tell people that this stuff is really not all that complicated, but it does, in many respects, require a good bit of discipline, because there is a huge temptation, and it is sometimes very difficult to say no when the funds are there to go ahead and spend the money. But I agree with you. I think the advice that I was trying to give to the Democrats back then was the right advice, and it is the advice that that I give to our members and to myself at the present time, and I just hope that we are able to stay the course, and I think we will be able to.
Well, not to besmirch our governor in any way, but I think it was telling that the candidate, Roy Cooper, was – you know, going around saying, well, you know, it's kind of silly to put all that money aside. And then all of a sudden Hurricane Matthew hit. And then all of a sudden we had wildfires out of control. And you didn't really say a whole lot, except that, you know, it's kind of good, candidate Cooper, that we've got this money here. And so I think he was proven wrong in a practical way. And the folks down east and out west, I'm sure, are very glad that you weren't spending all that money.
You know, Mark, the state requires our local governments, cities and counties, to have a certain amount in reserve. I think the minimum is somewhere around 8% of their budget in reserves. And yet, when we got to the majority in January of 2011, we had less than $200 million in our reserves. I think it was probably less than $150 million in reserves, which on a $20 billion budget is much, much less than 8%. In fact, even with $1.6 billion, we're not at the 8% level yet. So I think we've got a little ways to go to actually live up to what we are asking our local governments to do.
Now, not to put you on the spot, but I have described the relationship that has unfolded so far between our new Governor Cooper and you guys in leadership in the General Assembly. He's been kind of acrimonious towards you guys, and my question, Senator, is do you think that there'll come a place, you guys will get to a place where you can be a little bit more harmonious, or do you think he's going to be antagonistic throughout the whole session?
Well, I don't know. I think that there are things that we are going to disagree on, and when those things come up, I am not going to be surprised, and I would suggest that other folks shouldn't necessarily be surprised when he says that that he thinks we ought to be going in another direction. By the same token, I am. From time to time, it will be incumbent upon me and upon our members to point out where we think the governor is advising that we go in a direction that we shouldn't go in. And as long as folks understand and appreciate that those things are going to happen, our system is set up for those disagreements to be resolved in certain ways. I think we'll be okay. That there are some things that we're going to agree with him on. There are some things we'll disagree on, and I think ultimately our obligation is to do what the people of North Carolina elected us to do. And I am fully convinced that the members of the General Assembly understand that and will proceed to do as they should.
Well, just as recently as yesterday at the Eggs and Issues breakfast, he was kind of smacking the tax cuts that have been put in place and saying that we should spend more money on education. And before I get to your specific response about that, Senator, one question I think, for example, K-12, if I'm correct, is getting over $8 billion a year in education. And that doesn't sound like chump change to me. And when people on the left cry out for more money, and I'm just wondering how much is enough, because it seems like $8 billion is a fair piece of change, and they ought to be able to make do. I mean, am I wrong there? I mean, or, you know, how much do they want? 20 million, 50? Or I mean, what?
Well, this may not come across exactly as I hope it would, but when you're at a restaurant and you ask someone to come and pour you a cup of coffee. There's always the say when, and that means it's time to stop. I think for some people, there's never a when, W-H-E-N, when it comes to spending, and there will never be enough money. And one of the things that we've tried to do, and the reality is that we have increased spending over the past 6 years on education by significant amounts of money.
Yes.
I think what you've got to do is look at outcomes and whether or not the money that's being spent is being used appropriately. We constantly hear that there's a need to increase teacher pay. We agree with that. The question is whether or not you're going to increase teacher pay just by some abstract number, or whether you're going to tie those increases to certain outcomes. And so what we've tried to do is create a solid base of pay for teachers, and we've raised that so that last year we had the average with that base at $50,000. The Senate is committed to actually get that up to $55,000. But beyond that, what we would like to see is those additional dollars that would go to teacher compensation be tied in some way to outcomes. Are our students actually performing better? Are our teachers actually providing the necessary instruction for growth of students? And so we've done that. In fact, one of the examples for that is this year we have a bonus program that is going to provide bonuses to teachers who taught in the third grade last year based on how well students have done, not necessarily in raw scores, but in growth from the beginning of the year to the end of the year, in the top 25% of teachers statewide and in LEAs are going to be receiving bonuses. And I think that's the kind of model that we need to continue to work on.
Well, absolutely. And one thing I wanted to ask you about, Senator, is, okay, here's my position. A lot of money is being spent, and I'll never forget sitting in an education committee meeting a couple of years ago, and one of the people from the university system said, well, the biggest problem we have is that our incoming freshmen need remedial reading training. They can't read. And I know that this was something that was very much a passion of yours, the Read to Achieve legislation, the Excellence in Public Schools Act. And, you know, it's hard for me to understand how billions of dollars can be spent and teachers, you know, clamoring for pay raises, and yet students can't read at grade level. And so there's to me, a disconnect somewhere in the system. Has the Read to Achieve program been able to accomplish so far what you have envisioned it to accomplish? How's that doing? And, you know, how do you make sense as a citizen looking at the system? You know, people wanting more money, as you said, outcomes are important. And to me, if your kids can't read, then you shouldn't be asking for a raise. I mean, that's just plain talk, but I mean, that's the way I look at it.
Right. Well, Mark, I agree with you. What we know is that kids who are not able to read at grade level when they finish the third grade tend to be a larger proportion of those kids who don't finish high school, or those kids who may finish high school, yet if they go on to community college or to university, end up in a remedial program. And so the Read to Achieve program was implemented and is designed to help address that problem. What we have seen, at least in early results, is that our fourth grade reading scores on the NAEP test are better. We are moving ahead of the national average as far as that's concerned, and so I think we're seeing some progress. I think we've got to continue to look at that program and implement improvements to the extent that that there are improvements that that can be made. I think, unfortunately, a lot of times the way people score how well we're doing in education is how much money we're spending.
Yeah,
and I think that's the wrong approach. I think it's outcomes for students. How many of our kids can read? How many of our kids are not just graduating from high school, but are graduating from high school with the necessary skill to either get a job or to go on to some additional training at community college or into university? And I think, unfortunately, up to this point, we are not doing as well as we need to, and there's a lot of improvement that can be made. But we're only going to get that improvement if we pay attention and measure how well the students are doing, as opposed to measure how much money we're spending.
Absolutely. And I think, by the way, I think that legislation was excellent, and I appreciate the vision that you have in trying to help our kids get a leg up by helping them be sure to be able to read at grade level. Now, one thing that I wanted to go back to, because there's such a disconnect, not disconnect, but such a divide between conservatives and those on the left. And Governor Cooper's quote was, "Further corporate tax giveaways." And, you know, that kind of a verbiage tends to speak to people to try to, you know, engender envy or jealousy or some kind of emotion. And, you know, I'm sure that our governor is not stupid, and I'm sure he knows that if a business climate is good in our state because corporate tax rates have been lowered and we attract businesses and those businesses hire people and the tax base grows, et cetera, that's a good thing. So do you ever get frustrated, Senator Berger, with the characterizations that the left uses, you know, corporate tax giveaways, tax breaks for the wealthy, blah, blah, blah? I mean, it just irritates me because, you know, either they really don't understand or they're just trying to be ugly.
So, Mark, I think there's a fairly simple question that you can ask that will give you a strong hint as to how people approach that particular issue, and that is, whose money is it? And so if someone is saying that a tax reduction is a giveaway to the taxpayer, then that's someone who thinks that that the money belongs to the government, that it's not either the individual's money or the money that that belongs to a business.
Excellent.
And so I think, unfortunately, what Governor Cooper does when he uses rhetoric such as that is he exposes himself as someone who is a liberal who believes that all the money belongs to the government, and just by reason of the government's largesse, they might deign to give some of it back to the people. Well, I believe that people and businesses, through the sweat of their brow or their hard work or their good ideas, earn income and earn wealth, and they recognize that some of that income and some of that wealth is needed to pay for the government that we need. But it by no stretch of the imagination means that money belongs to the government. It's the people's money. And to the extent that the government takes too much of it, then we ought to give some of it back.
Well, I agree with you there. I'll be happy to get some of it back because I know I work hard for mine, and I'm sure everybody does. But, Senator, do you ever get frustrated with the court system? A lot of the very good things that the General Assembly has done, and the most glaring example is the voter ID legislation. I mean, even if they struck down every other piece of the Reform Act, you know, to strike down voter ID, to me, is just not very smart. And when you sit there in the General Assembly and work as hard as you do and craft legislation, and it's supported by the vast majority of the people in our state, and then a few judges with an axe to grind strike it down, does that make you throw up your hands and just really get frustrated? And is there any way, I guess this is two questions, and the second question would be, have y'all thought about, okay, maybe we can do the voter ID thing a different way? Is there another way to skin that cat and maybe try to get it to where it would pass the court system?
How much time you got? here's the way I'll try to answer that question, Mark. First of all, our system, both at the state level and at the federal level, is designed so that that you have three branches of government, and there are certain checks and balances, and each branch has a certain function. The judicial branch is not designed, was never designed, and should not be utilized as an entity or as a branch of government that creates policy. Policymaking is, in most instances, more appropriate in the legislative branch. Unfortunately, what's happened is that the court system has, in a number of cases, gotten into not deciding whether or not something is consistent with the authority granted in the Constitution, but gotten into whether or not something is a policy they agree with or disagree with. I think that, in large measure, is what you're seeing with voter ID. That you've got judges who have substituted their personal opinion of what's an appropriate policy for the policy that has been adopted by the people's elected representatives. And I think that's unfortunate. And yes, it is frustrating, and it is something that I think is relatively new, at least to the extent that we're seeing it, and is something that needs to change.
Senator Berger, I don't want to keep you very much longer. I know that your time is at a premium, but I wanted to ask you, and I don't know that I really am looking for a specific answer here. Maybe I just want you to hear a comment and see what you think, but there are a lot of conservatives, myself included, who have very vigorously and vocally and consistently supported yourself and Speaker Moore and the other leaders of the General Assembly when it came to House Bill 2 and believing that, you know, little girls and wives and daughters ought to be safe. When I read in the newspaper or online that, you know, Governor Cooper is saying, well, I've been talking and it looks like they're, you know, a deal to repeal might be in the works, it makes me a little nervous because, you know, we've stood behind you so strong, Senator, and it makes sense that women should be safe. And so if there is any kind of repeal, how do we continue to guarantee the safety of our loved ones?
So one of the things, Mark, that is, well, actually, there are two things that are crystal clear to me. One is that I can look at House Bill 2 and look at every part of it, and I can explain why it is there and why it is good policy. And I think if given enough time one-on-one with folks, I feel like most people will be in the same place. The second thing that I think is very clear is that when you ask people around the state of North Carolina whether or not HB 2 has is helping the state or hurting the state, I think the folks that say it's hurting the state runs in the 60-70% range. Now, those two things cannot both be true in the in actuality.
Right.
I do not think that HB 2 as a policy is necessarily a bad policy. And I think the main reason that most people would point to it as being a good policy is what you pointed out, and that is that we've got to make sure that we do not have something in state law that makes makes it more dangerous for women and girls to go to public facilities, whether they be restrooms or locker rooms or showers in our schools or otherwise. And so so the concern that that a lot of folks have is that if the perception is that HB 2 is hurting the state, what is it that can be done to modify that perception? First of all, I don't think what would need to be done is make any real change as far as protecting folks in those places that that privacy and safety become of real concern. But I do think that there are a number of folks who feel like that that there should be or could be or hopefully will be some modification to some parts of HB 2 that would address that it is hurting the state perception that's out there.
Okay. Well, Senator, I will say this. I have supported you since day one and will continue to do so. I trust that you'll make the right decision for the citizens of our state when it comes to not only that piece of legislation, but the other ones that come across your desk. And so keep up the good work. I know that you've got a lot in front of you for this session. Somebody told me that you had said you want to get out by June, and that would certainly be a breath of fresh air, wouldn't it?
That would be excellent as far as our members are concerned, but probably more importantly, would be very good for the people of the state of North Carolina.
Well, but what am I going to do? What am I going to talk about if you guys...
We'll still be around. We just won't be in
session. Senator, thank you very much. It's always a pleasure, and thank you not only for being our guest, but for all the leadership you provide for the state of North Carolina.
Thank you, Mark.
All right. Well, there you go. Senator Phil Berger. I am so happy to have spoken with him. And I hope that you enjoyed our conversation. As I told you in the introduction, he didn't bat an eye when I asked him about House Bill 2. I thought that his answer was really good. And I wanted him to know that, again, folks like myself and other conservatives, and not just conservatives, but people who have a concern about the safety and privacy of women and little girls and even, you know, I mean, doesn't just have to be women and little girls. It could be children, regardless. If you're concerned about their safety, we have stood very resolutely in support of this legislation because it's just common sense. And so when talk arises about repealing it, well, you know, makes you a little concerned. And so I appreciate him answering my question. And I would love for you to share this interview with Senator Berger with your friends and your family. You can do that very easily. Just send them a link, freedomactionnetwork.com, or send them to the iTunes or Google Play stores. Either one. We're at both. Thank you so much for listening to this program. We're excited to have Senator Berger as our guest. But you know what? We're more excited about you listening. We really appreciate it. We don't take it for granted. We are working hard to bring you the very best content that you can find anywhere in North Carolina when it comes to North Carolina state government, politics, policy, and other things that matter to you and your family. Until next time, my name is Mark Scheiber. Thank you so much for listening to What Matters in North Carolina.